Today's program brought to you by Bonnie Plants. For more information, visit bonnieplants.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to another Sunday with the main course on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here with Philip Gilmore.
Good morning.
And myself, Alexis McLaughlin. We're sitting in for Patrick Martins, and we will be joined later on by Chef Sal Scognamillo. He's a third-generation chef and owner of Patsy's Italian Restaurant, which is a New York institution, so we're really excited about that.
Patsy's. Yeah. Like to be in a fly on the wall of that place for the last 70 years.
Yeah, it's been open since 1944 and is, I mean, well known for its just, I guess, celebrity clientele or everyone that's...
Sinatra.
The Stillers.
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin.
I always, you know, it's, you know, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Ben Stiller. He always follows in that sequence.
Brad Pack Jr. or Rat Pack. But first, I wanted to just catch up with you. I feel like it's been a while since we've just been in the studio on a Sunday hanging out.
Yeah, we did a couple pre-records, and then you covered my shift once the last 2 weeks ago. But yeah, just been plugging away. Hi Hello finally opened my restaurant out in the Jefferson Stop.
Yeah, a lot's been going on.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going good. Me and Kip and Chance know a lot of people in the neighborhood, so we figured it was going to be busy, but the restaurant is right on the corner of a subway stop, and it's like kind of the central nerve of Bushwick right now. There's so much foot traffic, so any given night, like, there'll be 70% of the people in there we don't even know. So
that's awesome. Why don't you detail a little bit more of where... Actually, how to get there for anyone that's interested in stopping by.
Oh, well, if you take the L train, you get off on the Jefferson stop. And then if you exit Wyckoff exit on the train, it's right when you get to the top of the stairs. It's just right there.
Awesome. And this is, like, it's, you know, it's a sandwich shop. It's
mm-hmm.
got a lot of different things on the menu.
Yeah. You know, well, we had 20 months to think about the design of the place and... And also the menu, so it's kind of neat to see it come to fruition. You know, we've talked about before, we've had lots of like little hurdles along the way. Just, you know,
it's 20 months. Is that like a typical incubation time for a restaurant? Because this is your second restaurant.
One. I mean, it's there's no really typical thing. Like, I think Momo took 13 months. I think Roberta's took 18 months. Montana's Trail House took 2 years.
Yeah.
There's a barbecue place across the street from Momo that's been going for over 2.5 years. But that's a massive undertaking. That's like, you know, thousands of square feet. But it's like in New York, there's such potential to have a successful restaurant in New York. So I think that, like, over the years, there's also the thing, I think that, you know, over the course of the last 50 and 60 years, there's been a lot of, like, you know, illegal fronts for restaurants, you know, like, it's the typical, you know, with whether it's Chinese or Russian or Chinese or Italian mafia, the restaurants in New York are these typical things that, you know, people funnel money through. So I think that there's just these ridiculous hurdles, you know, checks and balances that every year the checks and balances get worse and worse. And so it's just like insanity now to open a restaurant.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of the regulations that are in place are archaic or left over from the, you know, mob times and union laws. There's just like a...
Well, you know, the thing is if you take any of the even the health department or the state liquor authority or the Department of Buildings or any of it, if you take one of the little check, you know, little loopholes or whatever, and you look at it individually... out of context, it makes sense. But then when you put all of them together, it's not cohesive. It's just like literally a web of confusion, you know? Because each individual one, it's not like they're, I don't think they're individually like trying to say, you know, make it harder for people. But, you know, there's, you know, how many fires and buildings have exploded in New York in the last three, you know, in the last month, well, you know?
Yeah.
And those are because of people doing things illegally. And especially with restaurants, you have so much like, you know, electrical equipment and gas and, you know,
and then the liability flames. Because it is open to the public.
Exactly. And then also too, the restaurants, it's not like other places where there's just a freestanding building. The restaurants are usually located, you know, below 100 people that live upstairs. So, you know, I get it, but it's just not fun to go through. Yeah.
Man, we are making this sound not fun.
Yes,
so far.
Don't do it.
How about the more fun stuff? I want to talk about the menu a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. My favorite thing in the world is just a well done simple meal.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, you know, sandwiches seem error, like, you know, idiot proof, but yeah. There's so many ways to fuck them up.
You know, I was on Snacky Tunes last week and I was talking to Darren about that. It's you know, I think the concept of the sandwich is easy, but it's so easily fucked up too. You know, people don't put enough salt on it. They don't have any type of, you know, lemon juice or vinegar or any sort of acid on it. Or it's like, you know, it's too much meat or not enough meat or too much bread or not enough bread, you know. So I think, you know, and also crunch. Things, I think, have to have crunch in a sandwich. So, yeah.
I was always a big fan of Alton Brown. He had this, like, Subway sandwich architecture that I used to follow where he would dig out the center of the bread,
yeah,
like a dugout canoe a little bit,
yeah.
And then that way the ingredients would sit inside the bread, so they would be held there, so it wouldn't all squish out,
uh-huh.
And it made more room, and it took away the extra bread that you didn't need, but just left like the crust and
sure.
The great stuff.
Yeah,
the outside.
We do that. Hi, hello.
Really?
Yeah, we scoop the bread out.
On which sandwich?
The duck sandwich, the roast beef sandwich, and
what about the Icelandic hot dog? Is that an actual thing?
It is. There's a large culture of hot dog love in Iceland.
I had no idea.
I actually was gonna try to cheat and say the name of this the most famous place. Actually, hold on one second. There's a really famous hot dog stand in Iceland, and it's a It kind of got a little bit famous for because Bill Clinton ate there like five times. So if you go to the hot dog stand, they actually have all these pictures of Bill Clinton. But
his legacy of fast food loving.
Yeah, let me try to pronounce it. It's called Bejaren Bestu Pilsur, but it's just literally a hot dog stand. But it's just you know, you go there at like 2 a.m. and there's a line of like, you know, 20 people. And so what makes it an Icelandic hot dog is they just do like a grilled hot dog bun, and they have lamb hot dogs. And they taste very similar to regular American hot dogs, but they're just made out of lamb. And then they do like this caper remoulade, and then brown mustard, ketchup, raw onions, and fried shallots.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so we're doing that. We're doing that on a Martin's potato bun, and then we're doing it's kind of hard to find lamb
are
hot
you doing
dogs.
It with a yeah you
we're
guys
doing
are doing
with
it with a duck hot dog.
Yeah,
is it really easier to find a duck hot dog than it is to find a lamb hot dog?
Yeah, there's D'Artagnan, you know, has everything duck, so
that's true.
Yeah,
they're a little...
so it actually, you know, it just has a little bit of the gaminess that you get from lamb that you don't get with pork, you know.
Yeah,
so the duck does. Yeah.
What's your favorite thing on the menu right now?
Well, since I had 20 months to think about sandwiches, I really, everybody, you know, obviously when I'm there, people are like, what should I get? And I, you know, the menu is only, what, eight things, and I stand by every one of them individually. So, I think kind of the sleeper on the menu is the jerk chicken sandwich. It's a sandwich that I came up with, what is it like? Way back when, in 1997, I was working at a Jamaican restaurant in Little Five Points in Atlanta, and I used to make the sandwich for myself, which was like, it was pineapple brioche, and then a grilled jerk chicken breast, cheddar cheese, onion, lettuce, and then like a chipotle mayonnaise, and then a pepper jelly. So I kind of recreated that. I've actually been thinking about doing a restaurant with just that sandwich for like since I'd made it because I think it's the best sandwich I've ever had. So that's kind of dear to my heart.
That was the concept of the restaurant was just build a menu around.
Well, no, I've always joked that I wanted to get like either like a food truck or just like a small like you know 300 square foot storefront and then only serve that.
Well, go big or go home. Yeah, exactly. Now have a whole restaurant.
Well, I think that's actually technically go small or go home, but. Yeah, so I really like that one. Yeah.
I think that's what the when I went in, what the server recommended to me. I don't know what's that kid's name. He was the host at Momo.
Bryce.
Like the sweetest kid in the world.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say little kid. He's an adult.
Yeah, he's a man.
He's a man.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's a little baby too.
He's a little baby man. Yeah. The drinks were nice too. You guys put, you know, a little bit of thought into that. A little bit. 20 months of thought into that later.
Well, the cocktails came about a month ago.
Did you guys know you were going to have liquor? Because that's another part too about opening a restaurant. Yeah, like
we have a liquor license. I mean, we were kind of stressed out about the liquor license like month 7, but little did we know that it's going to take 20 months. So we got the liquor license like a year ago. So. And as far as, I mean, from the beginning, we wanted to kind of like, you know, focus on, you know, getting really good craft beer, but not, originally we were going to open a craft beer bar, but then we just kind of like, you know, we strayed away from that because the people that if you really go through all the loopholes to open a craft beer bar, the people that you're really going to appeal to is like 0.01% of the population. Like, you know, and then the real beer nerds, and they're going to be critical no matter what. Like, 99% of the people can't tell the difference between this and that, you know?
Yeah.
So, we are taking the beer program very seriously, but we kind of scaled it down a little bit. So, you know, we definitely have some nice beers. And then as far as the cocktails, we wanted to kind of escape the whole, you know, the guy wearing the vest with the mustache and the drinks that take, you know, 5 minutes to make one drink. Which we all respect that, but it's kind of had, I think it's had its time.
It's also
place.
Exhausting.
It's exhausting, and it's exhausting to order a drink to, you know, like, I want a rum and coke. Okay, well, here, let me, you know, juice this blood orange for the rum and coke. You know, I don't know. But, you know, so we went kind of like really, we just have three house cocktails, and they're all amazing. And, you know, we really want to like kind of focus on things like, you know, like Amaros and Sherry's and ports and, you know, things like that, like kind of things that like, I think go well with sandwiches.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I, you know, it goes along with the style of the restaurant too. The first time I was in there, I really liked it. It, you know, that whole farmhouse reconstruction, industrial, you know, chic thing that's everywhere.
Ghetto chic.
Yeah, just like, you know, everything is just refurbished and but done in like that. But done
wait.
No, not like this. Like, well, Roberta's is different. Roberta's is...
No, it's not. It's like Roberta's is different than anywhere else in the world, but it's like I was going to say, look where we're sitting. We're sitting in a shipping container with reclaimed wood in it.
Yeah. No, I like the reclamation kind of idea.
Yeah.
But when it's done in that I'm talking about that overly styled, you know, tumbler, really like just single aesthetic.
Yeah. But I'm talking about both of them because, I mean, this is maybe, you know, because Momo also has like reclaimed wood and rusted metal. But every place has this like dark, like rusted metal, reclaimed wood, whether it's super fancy or super lo-fi. But my whole point, what I want to say is that we completely tried to abandon that, hopefully. Yeah. Because it's kind of light and airy, isn't it?
No, it is.
It's soft
bright.
To look out, right?
I walked in there and I was like, holy shit. It's like sitting on my grandmother's house or grandmother's couch back in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
There's like, because it's got this like, this kind of plastered pastel, you know.
Pickled wood.
Yeah. On the walls, it's like all these like light pastels in there and they're just kind of plastered together. But it almost looks like from far away, it would be like if you squinted your eyes, it would be a you know, palm frond pastel fabric pattern. And then the pickled wood, that like kind of like rosy white out, you know, is it pine? I don't know. It looks
white ash.
Yeah. It just looks
we
like.
We didn't go on the cheap on it.
Yeah. It looks nice, but it looks bright and.
Yeah, we wanted
a little different. It looks different.
We want it to be like, you know, yeah, like kind of soft because it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like the whole, you know, rust wood dark wood. You know, it's been done, had its day. So
it's nice. It's the first place I've walked into that was, you know, I felt different.
Yeah.
That had a really different kind of airy, brighter aesthetic.
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's refreshing.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, where the trend is going to go. Because we've been on this, you know, for so long of the...
I think if you go into High Hello, it's definitely, whether you like it or not, it definitely won't remind you of anything you've seen before. It's really like we had so much time and energy that I wouldn't say that it's over-designed, but it's like every single little nook and cranny of the entire place is on purpose. Like every single element of everything you see in there is on purpose because we had so long to, you know, just sitting around thinking about things that we would do a project and then riff it out and do it again, you know, so for fun. Ha ha ha.
Are you having fun yet?
I'm looking forward to having fun soon.
When did you stop working so much?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's the postpartum thing, you know.
I didn't realize that was a part of opening a restaurant.
Oh, but... really? Oh no, that's the whole thing. Is I realize it now, but people said, you know, when you open Momo, like within a month you're going to want to open another one. It's like, you know, like you're. Like, you know, when some women have a baby and they're like, I want another one.
Yeah.
Like that.
You forget all the pain and all of a sudden it just becomes beautiful and you love it.
Yeah. Like, I want to do it again.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also kind of disgusting and gross at the same time. But yeah, you still want another one.
Like rolling a roller coaster and then puking and then wanting to do it again. Yes.
You just equated childbirth.
No, I know. No. Back up. I did not. No, I equated opening a restaurant. Yes, two separate, yes. Opening a restaurant.
I just want to make it either connect that idea or separate it.
Yes. And what, moving forward, enough about me. So what's can you tell me a little bit about the Kickstarter?
So Heritage Radio Network, .org, they live on the web. We're having a Kickstarter, of course, and to redesign the website. So there's the stuff that the code expires for the website, and you know it's a little dated anyway. It's not as functional. It was set up and it worked in the beginning. I mean, the whole roots of the station was really kind of like a pirate DIY beginning, and it's matured a lot. I mean, there's, you know, we're somehow here in the mornings, wasting some time together, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But then there's also like this, you know, an entire week's worth of programming. And so Aaron Fairbanks, the executive director, along with Jack Inslee and Allie Hamlin, they've all been working really hard to get this Kickstarter going to help fund just like an entire website rebuild. And they're in a really good place. They're already working with a team, so this like project's already going forward. I've seen some.
What is the goal?
The goal is to have just like a really user friendly platform.
No, I mean the financial goal is there.
Oh, the financial goal of the Kickstarter is $35,000.
Oh, that's easy.
Should be, you know, with everyone who listens and who enjoys. And, you know, the idea is, too, like, just, you know, just anything. Everything helps. And, you know, every little bit of support helps. Sharing it on your Facebook, your Twitter feeds, whatever. Yeah. All of that helps. But it's primed to be a really amazing redesign and really functional. And I'm really proud of everything they've done so far. You can go on to heritageradionetwork.org for a good example of why they need a new website. But also from there, there's a banner on the right that gets you to the Kickstarter, and you get to see the video of, you know, the just presenting, you know, the goal and what they're working towards. And it's really cool, too, because if you haven't seen, you know, the studio where all the shows are recorded, you get that kind of that backstage access and to see everything. It's a really cool space.
I donated a picture of myself as a 5-year-old. Yeah. Is that right? So you could see that.
Yeah, they made the goal of the first day. They had this goal that if they raised, I think, $10,000 in the first 24 hours, that they were going to send out a surprise, a Throwback Thursday surprise, and so they got embarrassing pictures of all the hosts. So
yeah.
I saw yours because it popped up on, we were on the same text chain.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Which I don't know if you realize you texted that picture to everyone.
I showed that to a few people, and I get
it was adorable.
The kid from The Shining a lot.
Yeah. Danny?
I think it maybe is the haircut and the plaid shirt.
But. Yeah. No, I see that.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put it up on this week's info so everyone else can enjoy
it. Profile picture.
Yeah. But they got like $10,000 in the first day.
That's amazing.
And yeah, a lot of traction, a lot of support. So really, really excited about that. And just hope it keeps going. So if you're listening and you want to support, or you know you should support, just $5, anything. But it's going places.
Awesome.
I don't know. There's still like 30 days left in the campaign Kickstarter. That's like a crazy. I thought it would peter out or people would get fatigued from it. But there always seems to be, you know, interesting things and people that are, you know, doing, you know, asking in really legitimate ways.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just people like, oh, I have this idea, fund my idea. You know, like the radio, they're already working with a design team, you know. They're ready to, like, you know, get the launch going. I saw this other one actually last night that was really interesting. It's this beehive. And basically it allows you to collect the honey by just draining it out of the hive without having to, you know, break the combs out of the box or anything like that. And it's this beautifully simple mechanism that just, I mean, you have to watch the video because
I saw it. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I don't even know if that was actually a Kickstarter because it was Australia.
Yeah.
Do they?
And I think they have Kickstarter there. Did I ever tell you the story? You know, do you know Bushwick Campus Farms?
No.
You don't know? Really? Bushwick Campus Farms, they build rooftop gardens in high schools. I think officially maybe Momo is the only restaurant they sell to.
Oh wow!
And then I help fund the rooftop gardens and the greenhouses, and the high school students do the work, and they get to take home some of the vegetables, and they, you know, kind of, you know, learn about gardening, which is not a normal thing in
the city.
Bushwick.
Yeah.
But they were doing a fundraiser, and I agreed that Momo would help sell tickets to this party or do this, that, and the other. And I was supposed to raise like something like, I don't remember, like $3,500. And I was really busy, and I'd been traveling, and then I got back, and they're like, okay, well, you know, just to remind you, you're supposed to, you know, raise $3,500, and if I don't raise it, like, I'm gonna have to pay it, or Momo's gonna have to pay it. So I didn't know what to do. So I spent like a good 8 hours a day for like 2 days. And I individually, now in my defense, I did not do any group text messaging. I individually Facebook messaged every human being I knew on Facebook individually and told them if they didn't give me $5, I was going to unfriend them. Yeah. And then if you did $10, you would get a free hot sake. And then if you give like $100, you get like this. And there's these different tiers. So the good news is I more than met my goal. I surpassed the goal, and I got to delete about 750 people on Facebook. Yeah, and I even had a disclaimer. I'm like, you know, like, if I delete you, that doesn't mean I don't love you. I'm just doing this, you know, because that's what I'm doing. And like, some people like really
check back again when you're not a cheap bastard.
Yeah, exactly. It's $5. I asked for $5
for the kids.
Yeah, for 1 year of friendship.
Like Wu Tang, we're for the kids.
Exactly. So. Yeah, so if you're ever in a bind, you can always threaten to delete everybody on Facebook.
Okay, I'm gonna pitch that to Erin, the executive director. I think that we'll see how she takes it.
It's so funny though. Like it's kind of, I don't know, systematic to where we are as a society. Like some people got really offended, and I'm like, well, I find it offensive that I'm funding fucking greenhouses in high schools in a ghetto. And you won't donate $5. I find that offensive. So yeah.
It's, you know, the idea of crowdfunding is, I think it's great. It's, you know, this idea of microloans. It's just when you have access to a large network.
Well, crowdfunding is not the same as microloans.
No. Yeah. It's not. But a microloan, like the idea that you're just getting little bits of money.
Well, you know from about the real microloan, the guy from India.
Yeah.
You know about that? The guy that won the Nobel Prize?
Yeah, for his work doing, like, you know.
I'm just obsessed with that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
Ma'am.
But we have, you know, we have these large networks now. Yeah. And it's so easy, just, you know, with digital transferring money, whatever. It just, you know, a little bit helps when you're dealing with scale and volume and so many people. So
I think too, also too, like it's maybe 20 years ago, like you would just give a check to the United Way or the Red Cross. And I think it's kind of neat now because, you know, it makes it easier to give, you know, but also too, you can specifically, you know, because of the internet, you can specifically know exactly where you're giving your money to, not just some random thing to make you feel good. you know?
And it's, you know, it's away from the lump sum idea where before you just wrote a check and that was your charitable thing for the year.
Yeah.
You can help out a lot of little places and it's easier for me to justify because it's like, just, you know, skip a coffee, skip going out, skip a dinner. Like, you know, it's so much easier to quantify because it is just like a small amount, but you know that.
Skip one of your legendary per se dinners that you've
month. That I'm known for. Once a weekend. Yeah, I got to get my 3,000 calories in somehow in one sitting. Just to help out and to know that, like, also it's just sharing it so that other people see it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything helps.
Yeah.
It's all good stuff. All right. Well, we're going to go to break now. And
I'm excited to talk to Sal.
Yeah. Come back and talk with Chef Sal for a little bit about his new book.
Yay.
You are listening to Quick by Dreams. This is the main course on heritageradionetwork.org.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Welcome back to the main course on heritageradionetwork.org. We are really excited. We have Chef Sal Scognamillo of a famous Patsy's Italian restaurant on the line. So,
are you there, Sal?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Hi, this is Philip. Thanks for being available on this Sunday morning.
Are you kidding? It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're a legend, man. You're a legend.
I don't know about that, yeah. But I appreciate it.
We're really excited to be talking to you. You of course, for those who don't know, are the third generation chef and owner of Patsy's Italian Restaurant, which was started by your grandfather, Patsy, in 1944. And you're just coming out with a new cookbook, Patsy's Italian Family Cookbook.
Yes. It was 13 years in the making altogether.
Oh, wow.
I did my first book back in 2002, and it was just a great experience. And my main reason to do the book was to try and get some of the history down. My father, God bless him, he's still around. He's 82. He's been working there since he's 11 years old. So I don't have a chance of retiring anytime soon. Not that I was thinking of it. But, I kept saying that, Dad, we really should get some of this history down on paper. And he's been there for it all. And I've had a great chance to witness it, full time for the last 30 years. I started right out of college in January of 1985. And I took over as the chef maybe a year later. My father trained me. And it was just, it's been a great thing. I'm very, very lucky. I'm very blessed that I really feel like I never have to work a day in my life. I mean, I'm so happy to be there. It's, it's tough. It's long hours, things like that. But it's a lot of fun. And writing this second book was a great challenge as well. We came out with all new recipes, a lot of great new stories, that's part of the history of the restaurant and just fun things that have happened throughout the years. And so blessed with all the generations of people that come back to us. I mean, we're generations of family working there, and we have generations of people that, bring their grandkids and everything. So we're really, really very blessed with that.
Yeah, it really is. It really is an institution in New York City, and as far as, Italian dining goes. I grew up cooking a lot with my grandparents and my parents, and I was always amazed, through the process of cooking or learning new recipes. I always learned a little bit more about family history. And I know that you've been working, like you said, in the restaurant for your entire life. Your father worked there his entire life. When writing the second cookbook, did you learn any new stories? Because that is, a component about kind of writing down the recipes and writing down the history. But was any of it new to you?
Oh, sure, sure. It's funny because my father, he says, certain things I'm never going to tell you, which is fine, that's great. But I said certain things, like he says, if we start talking about something, it triggers a memory. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking over 70 years of being there, it's just so much fun. And there was one funny story, it's apropos because, we always advertise our name when we say it's the restaurant made famous by Frank Sinatra. And he's brought so many people to us throughout the years, and people still come, of course, after he's gone, hearing that he used to dine there. They want to know what he ate, where he sat, and things like that. And it's appropriate. This is the 100th year of anniversary of his birth. And we talk about so many funny things. We're just talking about the other day because there's the documentary on HBO about Frank Sinatra right now. My father was telling me the story that I included in the second cookbook about Frank Sinatra came in to the restaurant with Ava Gardner, and my grandfather Patsy and my dad Joe were having dinner, which we still do about 3 o'clock in between the lunch and dinner services. That's when we sit down to have a bite to eat. And this was in the early 50s, so it was before I was born. And Frank Sinatra walks in with Ava Gardner, and she's wearing a beautiful full-length mink coat, and Frank Sinatra says, "Show Patsy the mink coat," and she's modeling it around and everything, and then he says, "Open it, open the mink coat," and they're getting a little scared. They're thinking, "Was nothing underneath there or something like that?" And she was, you know, her and Frank were, you know, like two positive forces against each other. So she was very, you know, like, oh, I'm not opening the mink coat. And Frank Sinatra says to Ava Gardner, open the mink coat. I told you. And she said, no, I don't want to do it. He said, I said, open that mink coat. And she gives him a dirty look, and she opens the mink coat. And what's inside there is a label that he had Sinatra had sewn into the mink coat that said, this coat was given to me by Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
Dude, I never had heard that story, which was fun.
Wow.
And we're so lucky, you know, the Stillers have been coming in forever, Jerry Still and Amira, and their son, Ben Stiller.
Yeah, and Ben actually wrote the foreword for the book.
He wrote the foreword for the book, and he wrote such a wonderful thing, which the synopsis of is that he first remembers as a little boy coming in that my grandfather, Patsy, would say to him, what can I make for you tonight? And he goes through a couple of pages saying, then Patsy's son, Joe, was my dad, said, what can I make for you tonight? And now me, I say, what can I make for you tonight? And then he ends it with saying that my son, Peter, who plans to come in and be the chef, he's only 16 right now, says, you know, Ben Stiller says, I really look forward to Sal's son, Peter, saying to me, what can I make for you tonight? I mean, it's just great that they continue the tradition of coming in and bringing their friends. And it's a, you know, it's a word of mouth thing. It's a restaurant that a friend of mine once said, you know, became famous and went right off Broadway. You know, we're on 56th Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue. And I wanted to point out it's our only location, Patsy's Italian Restaurant. And if any of your listeners would be so gracious as to come see us, please tell them to ask for me, Sal. I'd love to shake their hand and thank them in person.
Sal, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So you're the chef. Are you mostly like on a Friday, Saturday night? Are you in the kitchen and on the floor, or both? Or
you know, that's a great question. I try to come out and say hello to people and make sure that if the waiter or the captain happens to be busy and there's a party or two that wasn't able to place their order with him, I go over and check out, make sure they're okay, and then go around. As long as, you know, the question would be, as long as everyone shows up that night, all my workers in the kitchen, no one's out on vacation or out sick, and everyone's there, I can have the luxury of going out and saying hello. And I have to tell you, that's my favorite part of the business, going out and meeting people.
Well, Sal, I actually own two restaurants, and I own a sushi restaurant out here in Brooklyn called Momo's Sushi Shack.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and so it's surprising because I still like working the floor a lot, and it's people always say that like it's so nice for the owner to come over and say hi to them, and I know that Patsy's Italian Restaurant is known for their hospitality, but I find it so funny with most restaurants that the owner's invisible and they're not present, and I really respect you and your restaurant and the tradition of, you know, being present and actually being proactive in the experience of the guests, because it really separates you guys from a lot of other places.
Well, you know, that's a great point, Phil. It's true because, you know, nowadays a lot of restaurants are owned by corporations and the owners, you know, usually playing golf somewhere or something like that. But we're so blessed to be there and have the family there all the time. And my grandfather Patsy actually taught us that that's the most important thing. You know, when you have a city with, I don't know, close to 15,000 restaurants, it says something that you say to the people that make the decision to walk through your door. I go there and say, well, thank you for choosing us. That really means the world to us, and I want to make sure you're happy. It's funny, you know, sometimes I wear just my regular white shirt, and sometimes I wear my chef outfit. And if I go around and I say hello to everyone, I say, how's everything going? A lot of times people will say, yeah, I need another glass of water, or can you get me another glass of wine? And then they'll turn around and see it's the chef, and they say, no, I didn't mean to ask you. I didn't mean to ask you. I said, what, are you kidding me? I said, that's what I'm here for. Don't be silly. As a matter of fact, my grandfather, Patsy, we almost get annoyed at him. He would wear this little like gray jacket that everyone thought he was the busboy. And he says, you know why I do that? So people won't be afraid to ask me to get him a glass of water or fill up the bread basket.
Well, you know, sometimes people, if they don't know them, the owner, they ask me, you know, are you the owner? And I'm like, well, I'll wait till the end of the meal. If you hated everything, then I'm the bus. I was the busboy. And if
like
you loved
that,
everything,
though,
I'm 100% the owner.
Yeah. Oh, that's fabulous! Congratulations!
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's it's a good business. It's a tough business, but I always say that my grandparents did the real hard work for us, and then we just got to keep the car on the road. You know what I'm saying?
Are you guys open for lunch or just dinner?
Lunch and dinner 7 days. We open at noon every day, and
wow.
We go. You know, it's interesting. We go straight through the day, and especially last week, you know, during the holidays, we get a lot of people. Thursday afternoon was unbelievable. It was almost like Christmas time. We had served about 55 people in between 2 and 4 o'clock.
Wow.
And,
wow.
I wasn't super prepared for that. I only had two waiters on the floor, but we managed, and thank God it's going well. And
where do you live, Sal?
I live in Valley Stream, Long Island.
Oh, wow. So you commute every day?
It's a little bit of a commute. You know, it's in the morning is some traffic, but yeah. Coming home usually is okay because by the time we leave, you know, everything's cleared out. But, you know, I'm so proud of this. I love the first cookbook, but I really like this second cookbook, the way it came out. The publisher gave me a little bit more of a budget, so I was able to put some nice color photos in as well. And, you know, great stories. You know, what I really pride myself on was that I wanted to make it just like the first cookbook. I wanted to make it that the people would do the recipes, easy ingredients, stuff you can find at the local supermarket, you know. And I've gotten good feedback with that so far. And it's so funny. I mean, I couldn't ask for better publicity than this. The book came out March 24th, and on March 23rd, George Clooney came in with his wife, Amal. And it's unbelievable that, you know, the paparazzi must follow them around. And it was all over the news afterwards. And he has such a great quote in my cookbook, if I may say. It was, this is from George Clooney. He says, "Since I have a picture of my mom eating at Patsy's Italian restaurant when she was pregnant with me, I can honestly say that I've been going to Patsy's Italian restaurant since before I was born."
That's really
and
funny.
And it's been a great part of my life ever since. And it was just, it's a lot of fun. And And, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, because celebrities go there, it's like, you know, no, you know, the average person. No, everyone to me is important and as a celebrity because, you know, again, you made that decision to walk through the door, and that means the world to us. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that we still, you know, like I said, we have this one location, 56th Street, and there's other places, similar names, and not us, just in case people get mixed up. But what we did was to, quote-unquote, expand. You know, I had, like I said, the first cookbook, 2002, now this cookbook. But 1994, which was our 50th anniversary in business, we came out with pasta sauces, which we sell in a supermarket, you know, supermarket and specialty stores all over the country. And I think it's a great way to have something that you think, you know, is represents yourself in a good way because everyone who buys a jar of sauce has the potential to come eat at your restaurant then. So it's that kind of, you know, detail to control to make sure everything is good. I still buy my meats and my vegetables and my cheeses from the same supply as my grandparents.
You're still going downtown for the good meats, though.
I mean, you know, and it's just a level of consistency. I think the greatest compliment I've ever gotten was, you know, longtime customers coming in. I said, "Gee, I hope you enjoy everything tonight." They turned back and they pointed at me and say, "Sal, I know what the food's going to taste like before I come here. That's why I come here." And it's just it's a labor of love, and I'm so proud and honored to have people that come back again and again and again.
Well, it really shows, and your cookbook, your new cookbook, is fantastic. The photos were beautiful, and it's really something that, I mean, if you want to get it to get some great recipes, it has that. But it also just has this amazing history, you know, chronicling, like, you know, authentic old Italian New York. So it's really interesting for that.
Sal, where can they buy the book?
Thank you. Yes, they can buy the book on, you know, anywhere where books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And if you buy it at the restaurant, at Patsy's Italian restaurant, I'm happy to autograph it for you. And when you buy it in the restaurant, we give you a free jar of the pasta sauce, too, as well.
Oh, really?
Which
oh,
is
that's great.
And, you know, it's just something I think people will really enjoy. I always try and promote, tell people to keep the history going, keep teaching, you know, your younger generation the recipes. I mean, we have a whole section on Easter, which just went by, and all the traditional dishes. And you know, when you think about Italians and food and things like that, it's all about family. It comes back to family. And it's fun to have around the table with your family and your friends enjoying these great traditions. And it just makes you feel that much closer.
Yeah. Well, maybe we've inspired some people for a little special Sunday dinner tonight. That's always my family tradition.
I hope so, and I hope that the people enjoy it. And, you know, I've seen so many people posting on a Facebook page where they made the recipe, and I said, "Take a picture, let's see how it came out." And you know, they're saying, "This is great. I didn't think I could do it, but it's, you know, it's not, you know," I said, "Don't be afraid. It's not that hard." I mean, some of these recipes, like the lasagna, for instance, it takes a long time, but it's not difficult to do. You just follow the steps, and it's, I made that recipe actually on Martha Stewart. And I have to tell you, when I was on that show, which aired live back, I think, in 2007, I had to make lasagna every day for 3 months at the restaurant. So it was great. I mean, I usually make it once a week, but that's another thing. We cook everything to order. Someone wants something different, something special, I'll make it. Someone wants the lasagna, you know, call me the day before, I'll make it. Or the beef brajol, which, you know, takes about 3 hours. And, you know, just give me a heads up. I'm happy to do it for you.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, I got to imagine you're going to do great with this book. I've been seeing you everywhere. I saw you in the cab ride home last night. You're on the I would.
Yeah, that was so funny. They told me they were going to show that in the cab ride. I think I'm stalking you. That's what
I was so excited. I was talking with a friend. I'm like, yeah, I got Sal on the show tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to it. And then look down, and there you were.
Oh my goodness, that's funny. Thank you. Yeah, that was a fun piece with Sandy Kenyon. Is a nice man. Yeah. A great reporter. It's a great thing. We're very blessed, and I really hope that people do enjoy this book, and they have any questions, and they can, like I say, they come to have dinner at Patsy's Italian restaurant, please ask for me because I want to say hello.
All right, well, they'll know where to find
you're
you.
You're going to see me sooner than later. I'm coming back to see
that
you.
Would be
I can't
wonderful.
Wait.
thank you so much, Chef Sal, for joining us on Sunday, and good luck with your book, Patsy's Italian Family Cookbook, for anyone, again, that's interested. And we hope to see you soon.
Yes, Al. Very nice to meet you.
Thank you, and continued success with your radio shows and your restaurants. That's great.
Thank you so much. All right. Have a good day.
All right, guys. Well,
he was awesome.
That was awesome.
What an honor to have that guy.
Oh man,
he was so cool.
I want to go there now and just like hang out for a Sunday afternoon. That sounds like a perfect Sunday dinner. It really is an institution, that restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those places that hasn't changed in a great way.
Well, you know, it's kind of a dying thing in the restaurant industry. But like a lot of things he was saying, it was like, you know, the same stuff that I read in Sirio's book, you know, Sirio Marcioni.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From Le Cirque. It's like, you know, like Sirio, like, you know, wants to engage the customer. If you make it through the door and you're sitting at the table, it should be a unique experience, not just like, you know, cattle.
I think that's the old New York, you know, the old restaurant. It's interesting because we fetishize food so much now, and we fetishize, you know, and the celebrity of chefs, and I love the idea of like a neighborhood restaurant that has notoriety and has these wonderful people that are known for their hospitality, that are, you know, like no bigger than it's you know, than the neighborhood and anything else. That was fun.
Well, I guess I'll see you next Sunday there, Alexis.
See you next Sunday.
Thanks, Liz.
Have Sunday.
Song for the main course is I Never Had by Breedlove and Chufu.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.